Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk, the podcast. This is Laura Mai, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and boy, do I have a set of interesting circumstances going on right now. I'm headed to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to do my conference there on Thursday and Friday, and we thought we were going to be ahead of schedule today, and we would make it to New Orleans. We're going to spend a couple of days there before heading to Baton Rouge, and I thought I would be there in the hotel and set up and ready to go, and we're not. We're in Meridian, Mississippi, and my wonderful husband and business partner, Johnny Mize, has sweet talked the staff into letting me use the hotel lobby here in a hotel at Drury Inn in Meridian, Mississippi. And again, we're so thankful for that and want to give a big shout out to them. They're being so, so great to us, and we so appreciate it. Our special guest today, Sharika Bentham, who's been on the show before and is a speech pathologist in Barbados, is going to join us, and she's going to talk about the Easy Speak Autism Intervention Project that she set up and hosted earlier this year. She's not quite on the line with us yet, but I've spoken with her, and she's going to be here, but we're just going to kind of wait her out. Until then, let me go ahead and talk about some announcements. I've already said I'm going to be in Baton Rouge on Thursday and Friday. Day one of that conference is best practices to facilitate early speech language development in toddlers with communication delays and disorders. And this is an updated course from my original course, Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor. But there are new video clips, new research, updates with evidence-based practice. So there's still room for that day, especially on day one. So if you want to come join me there, even if you just want to pay on site, you come on, because we would love, love, love to have you for that day. Day two of that conference is pretty close to being sold out, and it's the course that I started teaching last year. But again, the new improved version is Building Verbal Imitation in Toddlers. And it's the theory from my book of the same name. So again, if you are in Louisiana or Mississippi or Texas or Arkansas or Alabama, like I was last night, and you want to drive to see me in Baton Rouge, again, we would absolutely love to have you for those conferences. In November, I'll be in Charleston, West Virginia, another favorite place of mine, and we're speaking at the Civic Center on that day. So we have tons of room, and if you've been thinking about coming to one of my conferences for a while and you haven't been able to do it, Charleston, West Virginia is the conference for you, because again, we have tons of space. Downtown Charleston is just beautiful. Everything that you would ever want to do is within walking distance, and so you can certainly join us there. And again, that's on November 7th and 8th. I've recently set up a couple of last-minute dates, and they're both the first week in December. On Thursday, December 5th, I'll be hosting the hometown event for all of my Louisville friends who've asked me over and over again, are you going to teach that new course in Louisville? Why don't you ever do the course where you live? How come we have to go out of state to hear you talk? What's up with that? And so I'm responding to those requests and doing that conference. And again, I'm just going to do the one day, just the newer conference, Building Verbal Imitation in Toddlers. And that's a 6-hour event that day, so that I can squeeze in some other things and talk about, again, some of that information from best practices. So that's going to be a super fun day, too. And again, if you've not heard me speak before, that's another great location to visit. Louisville Airport's easily accessible. We have a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful hotel for that event. So I'd love to see you on Thursday, December 5th. On Friday, December 6th, I'll be in Indianapolis doing the same conference I'm doing in Louisville on that Thursday. So that'll be a quick turnaround for us. So join us there if that's more convenient for you. And again, all of the registration information is on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and you can easily register there. If you are having any kind of problem at all, email me, and I will help you through that process. Sometimes maybe you're not as familiar with technology. You just need a little bit of help. You'd rather register by phone, whatever the circumstance may be. Email me at laura@teachmetotalk.com. We'll set that time up, or you can call our office number. And, again, I'll be happy to help you with that. Other announcements while we're waiting on Sharika to join us. Let me talk to you about the DVD course that's available for ASHA CEU credit. And again, even though I'm saying for speech pathologists for ASHA credit, if you are interested in this course and you are a developmental therapist, you are a developmental interventionist, special instructor, whatever they call teacher people in your state, this course is still for you. It's still relative to what you do every day in your early intervention program. So check it out. And again, it's the expanded version of day one of my course, Early Speech Language Development Taking Theory to the Floor. If you've heard me talk about it before, it's regularly a six-hour course. When I'm teaching it live this fall, I've expanded it to 7 hours. But if you get the DVD, it's 12 hours. So anything you've ever really wanted to know about that simple treatment hierarchy that I teach, social skills, cognition, receptive language, expressive language, speech intelligibility, anything about that, check out that DVD series. Now, we're going to wait on Sharika a couple more minutes. I hope that she hasn't had a last-minute emergency. As I said, I've been messaging her today several times. And she's just sent me a message. She is having some difficulty with the call-in number. Let's see if I can get her the better number here and see if we can get her on the line. I so apologize for this kind of delay. I hate live technology when things don't go as you think, and I think she's here. Sharika, are you there?
I am here.
Gotcha.
Well, good, it was the wrong number. I had to go into site.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All right, so let's talk about the great project that you did this summer, Easy Speak Autism Project. Is that the name of it? Am I getting it? Am I saying it correctly?
Easy Speak Autism Intervention Project.
Right. And Johnny's reminding me that I have not really introduced you. I'm in such a kind of chaotic state since we're traveling and I'm doing the show remotely today. And while the show was coming on, they were moving me to a different room, so I wouldn't be right out in the lobby. So forgive me if I'm a little bit off. But this is my friend Sharika Bentham, who's been on the show before. She's a speech pathologist in Barbados. I follow her on Facebook, and this summer you launched your project for their preschool age kids, right, Sharika?
Yeah, preschool age kids, yeah.
Right, with autism spectrum diagnosis. And so you're going to tell us all that went into setting up this kind of project. First of all, tell us what inspired you to do it. What made you think this would be a good time to launch a big endeavor like this?
Well, the majority of load right now is on the autistic spectrum, which is crazy. My days are never bored. So what I wanted to do, there are a lot of kids who are on the spectrum and they aren't in school yet. Because schools right now are having a huge problem where a lot of schools, they don't have the skills or resources to accommodate children who are on the spectrum. Special needs schools are bursting at the seams. They don't have many here. So the ones that they're not able to take them because they don't have the space. And so a lot of them, they're at home or they're in daycare programs that they really aren't doing much. Mm-hmm. So I was saying my future goal in the distant future was to open up a school.
Right.
School sort of program for them. So I spoke to some special needs teachers who are really interested in doing it. And we said, okay, let's launch it. Planned it for months and months to make sure that it ran, that it was the ideal program. So it ran how an ideal school setup, an ideal preschool classroom with all of the needs of children who are on the spectrum. Because there's, you know, you can deal with it and you can have speech and they can, and it's not followed up. So we wanted a disciplinary team where you have the teach model, where you have the structure teaching. They come in, get structure teaching every day, and they have a visual-based classroom. They get therapy. They get all different sub-therapies. We had art therapy. We had music therapy. And you just cater to the whole child. So that's what in all for a week.
So you were testing the waters to judge how a signature school might
my toes in the waters. Yes.
Okay, so you, it sounds like you had some help with that, like you were able to really collaborate and pull together. So the other therapy pieces sound so interesting, too. So what did you do, Sharika? You just started contacting other local professionals who could help you with that, right?
I did. I contacted therapists. I contacted people that did music. I did contact an OT, but she was too busy at the time. So
right.
We worked to an OT in the U.S., sent different strategies that we could use and incorporate. So we OT support, OT's for occupational, for the listeners who don't know. We have that OT support, but we didn't have an OT present, but we still were able to do activities that help with those daily living and those daily skills. And
right. And certainly meeting those children, meeting their sensory needs had to be a high priority because we know virtually every child on the autism spectrum has sensory issues that we have to address. And I always talk to speech pathologists who say, I don't know sensory or I don't do sensory. And I always want to say, how do you even do this job if you're not constantly – yeah, using sensory strategies because I think it's such an important part of any program, regardless of whether we're talking about a classroom-based preschool program or just an individual child who's on the spectrum. I can't imagine doing a 30-minute session without using some sensory support. So I know that that was a big part of your day. Yeah, even if you didn't have an OT there physically present with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a huge part of the program. We even had a sensory corner because our classroom, it was set up into stations. Our center had a center. We had the sensory corner. We had a listening center. And everything had its role because our children on the spectrum, they're very visual learners. Having those visuals was such a huge, huge help with and support for trance because you're moving from one place to another, you need, you're going, need to know why I'm pulling you in this direction or everybody's moving in this direction. So the visual is definitely that with that ease of transition.
Yeah, and we have to remember with most of those children who are on the spectrum, language is usually not a strength for them. I mean, after all, that's why they're getting speech therapy. So even telling a child verbal direction, so that's my visual support system, like pictures and a picture schedule would be so important for those little guys so they understand what's happening when telling them those words, those verbal directions don't always make sense. So for our listeners who our newer therapists, or especially for our listeners who are parents and who maybe this is one of the first shows that they're listening to, we always have to keep in mind how we can help our little friends compensate for their weaknesses. And if they have difficulty listening to and understanding language, using visual supports like Sharika's talking about are a huge, huge, huge method that we need to be incorporating to help our children achieve more success. So again, like you said, when they're not understanding the transitions, when they don't understand that the teacher said, come on now, we're finished with this, we're going to move on to this next activity, sometimes those words don't make sense. So using pictures and using any other kind of cue that they can see rather than something that they have to depend on to hear or listen to is something that we try to incorporate with our little guys with, especially with ASD.
Yeah, I was doing my teacher training because my teachers came training initially, and I went through visuals. And I likened that to you being in a foreign country, and this group of big, burly-looking men come up to you shouting something in a foreign language, and you have no idea what they're talking. How are you going to feel? You're going to feel like they're going to carry you somewhere and kill you. But if they come and they say something... Yes, you're going to feel intimidated. Come and they show you a visual while saying this thing. In this one, they show you, you know, a hamburger, something like that. You know, you feel more, you kind of know what they're talking about. You realize,
sure.
Oh, that means, okay,
yeah.
Time to go for hamburgers.
Right.
So it makes a little bit more of an easier thing.
Yeah, and I think it's such an important strategy. And so if we have therapists who are listening that you haven't gotten on board with using that, that's certainly something that you need to think about, and even introducing into your individual sessions. Visual supports can make a huge, huge, huge difference. Ms. Sharika, you mentioned the TEACH program, which is a visually, it's all driven by using visual teaching methods. And again, this is a strength for so many of our little preschool friends who were on the spectrum. And so talk a little bit about that structured teaching method. I use it all the time, but talk about, again, how you decided to use that program, what activities that you pulled from that. And you might even talk a little bit about the background information and how you started to be interested in those kinds of teaching methods.
Okay, sure. I like to go TEACH, and TEACH is actually T-E-C-H. It stands for Treatment and Educatistic and Related Communication to Handicapped Children. It's usually used primarily for children who are on the spectrum. I saw TEACH before I was a speech therapist. When I was working, I was shadowing a clinical psychologist initially, and I saw the structure of it. That's that they have structured teaching to help children function within everyday society. It helps them function within the classroom, the home setting, whatever setting they're in. What happens is that you have a format, you have your set schedule, or your set activities to do. You work from the left, so they're placed on your table. On the left, what activities you're going to do, whether it be fixing a pilot, whether it be learning how to set a table, so having setting, whether it be writing letters, fixing Mr. Potato Head. It depends on your specific goal for each child. So you do that.
Right, and the child's developmental level. And so, like, writing letters. The little guys that you worked with, that was a valid goal, and the children were developmentally ready for that. With the children that I primarily work with in early intervention, birth to three, the later example that you gave, learning to put the potato head pieces on Mr. Potato Head, or even something like matching by color, or matching by object, or anything like that, right, anything like that that's visually based, but that it's at the just right developmental level so that you can keep a kid's attention and so that he can learn to complete a task from start to finish and eventually be independent in how he works through that task and how he learns.
Yeah. So there's some therapists that may say, well, my child isn't even able to lecture right now. They can just sit down and put things in. That can be a goal. Taking something into the sensory bin, creating a sensory bin, that means I use rice, picking up a toy, putting it into that sensory bin, they have to put six toys in, that's their goal, you know, and every time they do it, I like to say in, so that you can get that language of it as well.
Right.
Right, another one that we use is stacking rings, so they have to take out all the rings out of their bag and put all the stacking rings.
Right.
Put it in the finished file because it's actually just teaching them that routine of that dependent task, and then you can build from there.
Yeah, and I think it is so important to start at a level where a child can be successful. And so if you're introducing these visual teaching tasks, my experience has been if you can't get a child to do it pretty easily, you need to modify the activity and make it even simpler. Fewer pieces. Yeah, fewer pieces or something that, again, is not quite so challenging so that you can really get a child through the entire routine, start to finish in one sitting so that, again, you accomplish the whole darn thing and they can move on to be independent with that. And so many times people still start at a level that's a little bit too high. So you want to be sure that you're using these simpler activities that you're talking about. Now, what's your best resource for getting teach activities, Sharika? And then after you talk about
Pinterest.
Yours, I'll share some of mine. Yeah.
Pinterest is usually my best. I have a folder on Pinterest, teach activities and speech therapists. I always say that speech therapists take over everything and make it theirs. Yeah, so we've got so many speech therapists on Pinterest, pinning lots and lots of boards for the different resources. Because when I was looking classroom, I had a board called Autism Classroom, and I got so many ideas from off Pinterest, linked to the blog that talks about how to set up the classroom, different resources to direct. And then the teach activities, which I have on the other board, it's just this resource of how to do from the very, very, very basic activities up to the more complex, at those who you would say are more high functioning. A shoebox task, which I really
that.
Like. And I've actually created quite a few of my own shoebox tap shoes. So save the shoe boxes after. Create your own tap.
Yeah.
And that's really useful.
Yeah, I love Pinterest for doing that. And anyone, if you're already on Pinterest and you don't follow accounts already who pin those kinds of things, you can just search teach or search visual teaching activities, and lots of options will come up. Now, with teachmetotalk.com, I have lots and lots of boards on Pinterest, and one of them says, for my little friend, ... And that's where I started just pulling and pinning these kinds of activities for two specific children that I was working with so that their moms, who were also on Pinterest, could see those. And then we could collaborate and talk together about how to use the activity first in a therapy session. And then I always turn those teach activities over to moms and dads as part of their home programming. Yeah, and so I think that's
Definitely.
So useful. Another resource that I've used is it's a book, and it's by a PhD person, Dr. Kimberly Henry. I think she might have been a pediatrician, and then she started really looking at this whole how do we teach kids with autism. She had some personal experience with that. She's written a book called How Do I Teach This Kid, and you can get it off Amazon. It's super cheap, and it's a great introduction. Now, some of the activities are really at a higher developmental level than most of the children that I work with, since I specialize in birth to three, birth to four. But again, it's a great way to kind of get your feet wet. And for people who really want the security of reading and holding a book in your hand rather than depending on doing an internet search or something, it's a great, great resource. And that's also a resource that I've loaned to parents who are interested in, again, making these kinds of activities part of their home program. So that's a super resource. And I think just Googling teach and teach activities, you can come across so many blogs. And so whether it be a parent blog or a teacher blog or a speech pathologist who use these kinds of visual structure teaching activities, and you can really come up with some nice ideas. Back in the winter, I did some last year, in the beginning of 2012, put together some therapy guides with some great holiday-related therapy activities that were all based on this kind of visual teaching. So anybody who wants to check those out too, you can find those at teachmetotalk.com. It's really, I first learned about that from a psychologist too. And I really like how we can take that program and again, tweak it so that we can incorporate our language goals as well.
definitely.
All right, so you did the teach stuff. What other components mm-hmm. did you put into place when you were planning your program, Sharika?
I checked out, there's a really, really good site called theautismhelper.com, and mm-hmm. that was my site for setting up the classroom, making sure I had all our centers for the levels that of children we were seeing, making sure we had the digital schedules of the pictures. So if you walked into my classroom setup, the first thing you would see is the picture schedule tree, which was a nice tree, and from the branches, you each child picture and their schedule for the day. So they would go to their picture, check the schedule. We had a nice little song, "Let's Get Check Our Schedules Coming Next," and that was really our transition.
Right. Songs are
check
huge
the schedule.
For
children. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's great. And I love how you just sing that song without, just unsolicited, Sharika, you just break into song with telling us.
I always do, even in therapy.
What your cue was. That's so funny. And I want to mention that I have linked your Facebook page for the Easy Speak Autism Intervention Project. I've linked that on TeachMeToTalk.com Facebook page and under today's podcast post. And so if you want to take a look at Sharika's great pictures, and there's a picture, I believe I saw a picture earlier when I was looking through this of that tree schedule. So we can take a look at that. Yeah. And so the kids
picture
came
of
in the
me
morning.
In the pool.
Yeah. That's so
and
cute.
The giant swimming with my five boys.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, and I do think seeing the pictures for therapists to know how to kind of set this up, or even for moms, if you're thinking, gosh, this speech stuff sounds interesting, this is something that, you know, how can I find more information about this? Take a look at Sharika's page on Facebook and see how she's organized some of this. So, okay, walk us through your day, Sharika. We've talked a lot about planning. Let's move on and kind of walk through your schedule. And so when the kids first got there, the first stop was at your tree,
they come
right?
in, check their, first stop is at the tree, check your schedule. Usually when they come, it's time for circle. So we start off in circle time. We go to our circle center. And we usually go through the same schedule. That has its own, circle time has its own specific. So we go across that schedule, and picture teacher, she's holding a board, and it shows that we do who is here today, which develops awareness of others around them and self-awareness. The weather, we did the days of the week song. So it is really fun stories like Brown Bear, Click Clap Moo, all those repetitive stories. Then we do a song, like an interactive song, Mudding on the Bed, those sort of songs. The one that we did, that was really good. And we also had the visual. So if we're doing it on McDonald's farm, everybody has it, and then they put on the animal on the farm, just to keep it really visual-based.
Right. And so remind us again, we know that these are preschoolers with autism. So what was your age range mm-hmm. for your little guys that you had in your family?
The smallest one is 3. He just turned 3. That's Miles, but you'll see him in the videos. And the oldest was, he had just turned 6. And that's Andrew.
Okay, so
quite high functioning, nonverbal.
Okay, so were they all nonverbal children?
All nonverbal, yeah.
Okay. So that's important to know. So using your visuals or your other AAC devices was a huge part of your day, because none of these children were yet communicating verbally.
We went from the very, very simple AAC to everybody. Oh, the first thing we did was the high song. I forgot in circle time. So everybody went and got one. Each person pressed the high, the Big Mac. To everybody.
Yeah.
And more mm-hmm. complex devices, you would see in the pictures, we have the Quick Talker 12, to tell stories or to answer questions every day, or the day that we did our beach theme, talked about what we saw at the beach, those sort of values.
Okay, great.
So
are you still there?
From,
okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay, you're cutting out a little bit, but that's okay.
Here. Can you hear
me? I can hear you now, yeah.
Okay. So then after we finished, we transitioned from circle. We had a little bit of free play where we're at Sensory Corner. And the thing about free was still structured play. So it wasn't where you do whatever you want. It was still structured. You're still following the child's lead, but within that structure, within that sensory area, which is very, very important, I find. Then we moved on to individual work, where they were their individual work tables and did their teach tasks, and then put them in their finished pile.
Okay,
just making sure you're still there.
I'm still here. So what did you do after their individual time? What came next in your day?
So after individual time, there was group work. So we had a nice big group activity, because children who are on the spectrum, what I talk to my teachers about and what I really reinforce is that they like to be alone. They like to play. They like to engage in lots of what we call solitary play. So I wanted as many group work tasks as possible, where they can have that interaction, where we can build those social skills, those turn taking, turn your turn skill. To have that awareness of what each person is doing at the time, really talking about what each person is doing, how each person feels that activity, whether he's related to a theme. So everything was related to a theme each day. We had our beach day, we had our health day, we had our transportation. So a group work task might be everybody gets to categorize pictures based on your land, place, plane in the sky, the in the water, in the sea, and the road, that sort of activity. So each child had their goals, whether they had hand over hand prompt, whether they touch it, again, depending on their goal.
Right. So what's your most successful group activity? What were your winners that week?
My winners were the sensory bikes.
Uh-huh.
Love making the sensory bag. This was one that my special ed teacher, Jess, she brought to us, and she brought in mouthwash, Listerine mouthwash, and she brought additional liquid, that soap detergent, and she said, okay, this is for an activity. I looked at her like, okay, what's happening?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear how you use Listerine. Tell me what you did with the Listerine.
What she did is that we poured Listerine into the bag, sheer gel in with it, poured in the glitter, we language around it. Like we had pour, we had swish, 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 and splash, splash, splash. We had lots of little sound in it. And I was still a little bit skeptical. But she then poured glitter and then sealed it with those bag sealers. I don't know what you call them. But you put the bag in and you seal it with the sealer.
Right, those vacuum sealers. Yeah.
Yes. And it created this sensory bag that everybody, all of the boys were soaking by. Them up and they threw them around. And because when you touch it, it has that sure. Because it has the scallop or whatever it is inside of it. It's pretty cheap, too, because of the glitter. You have the blue wash.
Right.
And
so it's pretty visual.
These sensory bags. Yeah. Pretty visual and pretty tactile as well.
Right, right. Well, that's an interesting idea. I've made sensory bottles before. And I certainly have done some things with in a tub of water, but I've never made little bags like that. And that's good that she vacuum sealed them, because I would think if you use a Ziploc, there's always the possibility that that could come open and then that would be a big, big mess. So that's a good idea, using the vacuum sealer machine thingy. Okay. So
definitely.
That was
another one is that, another one, baked cookies.
Say that again, Sharika. I lost you. Say that again. You did what?
We bake cookies.
Okay, you baked cookies, and I've done that with children before too.
Yeah, so we used our cookies. It was for our animals theme, so in the shape of animals, and we sang another song around it, and everybody got to carry home a cookie and parent press. Because that fit into our activity living theme as well. Because really, it's really something that's functional, something you can do at home, something that the parents can do at home.
Right.
That was a fun one.
That looks cute. And again, you've got pictures of that one on your Facebook page as well. And
I
so
do.
Really cute. Yeah. So you use cookie cutters. And had your dough in the shape of animals. And if you don't want to do a cooking project with that, I make Play-Doh animals all the time with those kinds of cookie cutters. And that's a fun activity that, again, so many of our little guys, unless you're engaging them with something they can touch or using that tactile sense, they don't always want to stay with you. Mm-hmm. But that's an activity that's great. And even for kids who have those tactile aversions, these kinds of things are usually so interesting and so novel, they want to participate anyway. Even if they're not quite sure about it at the beginning, you can still provide some support and almost always get a child to participate.
Definitely. And these are children who, a lot of them, they're the ones that weren't sitting, that weren't participating in activities before. And just to watch them sitting, you can see pictures of them actually sitting and smiling and hands forward, wanting to try. And it was just so fascinating. There were so many times I was jumping up and down and clapping my hands, because just having these kids involved and doing things and sharing in the experience, when these are some of the ones that would be in a corner playing with a leaf or watching the fan open, and having them participating in these activities was just so fascinating, and it just showed the progress that they were making.
Right. Now, were these children that you all knew did you know them all previously?
Yes.
Are they children that you are currently serving? Okay, so you knew about them. You knew their strengths and their weaknesses, so you could really take that into account when you were planning.
Yes, that I knew. Four of them I see privately in my therapy, in my private practice, and then the other one I worked with him at a special school, but I didn't see him regularly.
I knew all of them. So did you and meet them where they were developmentally?
Yes.
Okay. So looking at these great pictures, you've got such a big variety. Talk about the swimming pool, Sharika. Talk about... And your post is so cute about that. It says water play like bosses. No rain can stop this jam. So talk about how you used your swimming pool for activity.
That was so funny, because I put that post because it was such a rainy day that day. And I said, no matter what, we are having our water play today. So in the evening, because we usually do our... Pardon? I think you're breaking up for me.
I'm just saying water with the rain. Again, that was, God-given on that day, because better way to talk about rain and wet than when everything is wet, right?
Yes, that is true. But they loved it. There was one little one that he was scared to get into the water. But I think that when he saw everybody else doing it and that it was okay. He was first quite approach avoidant, stepping and then going back, but then everybody got into the water and they had a blast. And we just had our goals, because I was the person in charge of that activity, because it was more of a speech therapy lesson and a play lesson. So we were doing things like splash, and we had the toys in, and we did pour, and we were doing things like motor imitation, so everybody had to stamp their feet in the pool, and we would follow what another child was doing, and if one child started to splash with their hands, we all splashed with our hands too. So it was so good. Hello? I think I've lost you. Hello?
Okay, I think Sharika, let's see if Sharika's back. Sharika, I'm back. Were you just talking that whole time that I was off? I hope you were.
I was.
Good, thank you. I knew there could be some technical problems. You're in Barbados, I'm in Mississippi. We're not in our normal environment, so I hope that our listeners hung in there and knew that we would try to get back on. Sorry about that. All right, so just pick back up where you were and just keep on talking.
Okay. Yeah, so I was saying how much fun the water play was, because we did lots of play activities in the pool, and they didn't want to leave the pool when the parents came.
That's always the mark of a good session when kids are upset because they don't want to leave therapy rather than they're upset because they're going into therapy. So that's how you always know when they're crying at the end instead of crying at the beginning. You know that you've done a good job.
That's true. And what I really was glad to see was the hope that parents have, because these are parents that they're not sure what's going to happen to their children. They've got the diagnosis of autism. They're not interacting with them as they should. And there's this fear, especially for the little ones, of how they would transition to a preschool setting, how they would function within a classroom setting with other children, if they would just stay in a corner and do nothing, if they run around the place, if they would cry all day. So it was so good for them to come on evenings and realize, okay, this child isn't looking at me because he's so busy doing activities that he's really enjoying participating in these activities. And I remember parents peeping in an hour, coming back and peeping in an hour after we started and saying, oh, he's sitting? He's actually sitting?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, and that's so great. And again, it's so important to give us that hope, especially for children who don't have access to quality services all the time, because those parents are just worried sick about educationally and academically how their little guys are going to do. So I am sure that you were a big source of hope and relief for those kinds of parents who were thinking there is a chance here that we're going to find a placement that will be successful. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
That was a huge thing.
Okay. I've looked at your water pictures. Those are precious. Talk about some of your videos that are on the page. I think I watched these before, and I remember you had some songs and some fun little verbal routines that you were doing.
There was an I am going to get your routine.
Right.
Yes.
Where you're doing some
there's
chasing and kind of tickling kinds of things.
Yes, chasing and tickling. That was one of the big ones with Miles, because Miles is a little one who he has difficulty with engagement and interaction. So I videoed this one of him playing with teacher, engaging with teacher, getting really good eye contact and that joint tension and vocalizing, verbalizing to continue the routine or to resume the routine. And it was good to see that engagement, that really good interaction, that those social skills, those pre-verbal communication skills coming out.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to know that as speech-language pathologists and as parents of these little guys, this is where we start, is when we start speech therapy for so many of those children, is to really work on making that social connection and making interacting with other people and looking at someone else and staying with someone else so fun that they want to continue doing that. And that's the first goal that we often try to address with children who are initially getting that ASD diagnosis or even who are suspected of that long before we start to work on formal language goals. We have to address that social piece. And I thought that video was really, really cute. And again, you can take a look at that yourself if you're on Facebook on Sharika's great page about her project. And I've linked it at teachmetotalk.com's Facebook page. I think I said that earlier, but we've had so many technical problems I want to be sure to repeat that so anyone can know where to see the great pictures and activities that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've talked about the things that we talked about, how you set up the program. We talked about the schedule. We talked about the things that went well. What are the lessons you learned, Sharika? What will you do differently next time? Because this is what makes a good therapist even better. When you can look back at a session or look back at a project and say, that was good, but next time I'm going to make it even better. And that's what I think we constantly need to challenge ourselves to do. So tell me your lessons and tell me what you'll do differently next time.
Okay. Yes, it was you I had interacted with initially when I sent this message to the SLP. It was the second day after I had started. And my problem, because, you know, you have this whole idea of how everything's going to run so smoothly in your head. And then
and then real life happens.
Absolutely chaotic in real life. And I just hit this panic point and I said, how do you get them to sit?
Right.
Okay, we've got the visuals, we've got everything happening. How do we get them to sit now? And I got some really, really good ideas from speech therapists on Facebook, from Laura, and we did the sensory things. We did the person-on-person support, so having the child sit on a helper or a teacher and just having that deep pressure to help the child to sit and to be regulated, because that's the most important thing for a child, to be regulated within their environment. Right. And by about the third or fourth day, I mean, you still had a couple hiccups, but most of them were sitting, and we had the wobble cushion and sensory cushions, and they were sitting on those and playing with them and saying, yes, we can send this from the first day, but it worked. It worked, definitely. Being able to take data was another huge obstacle, I would say, because you have all the teachers, you have a group of very, very busy children, and being able to say, well, the child sat for 5 minutes at this time, we were able to accomplish this, but 5 out of 5 times or 10 out of 10 times, we were only able to do that at the end of the day, and sometimes you forget what you did in the morning. So being able to take that data during the day and have forms that you can just tick off some things quickly, or you have forms of your goals that you can tick off during the day, would be something that would be a lot more beneficial, so that you can have an idea to monitor progress across the week. And we only picked up on that way to do things later in the week. So I would like that from the very beginning, so that we can have that
a baseline and then that overall progress.
Right. Mm-hmm. And keeping data is important. We, you know, a lot of times therapists either get too consumed with keeping data and they're not as spontaneous with children, and so you kind of lose that creativity piece because you're so worried about doing your checks and minuses on the piece of paper. But you can't go so far the other way that you're totally willy-nilly and you can't prove and you can't document the nice changes
exactly.
that happened during a session because you didn't have a good enough plan or a good enough tool to use. So that's great that you figured that out as you mm-hmm. went along too.
Yeah, and I wanted to have a bit more parent involvement if I'm running
mm-hmm.
it again, because the parents really, they saw videos, they saw pictures, but I would have liked them to see more of it live, you
right.
know, or having them be able to come in and do a session together.
Right. You know, what worked well
session.
For me, yeah, mm-hmm. when we had our playgroup program, and we did that, and again, it was 10 years ago now, 11 years ago, that I got to run that program. And so many of the things that you talked about brought back so many good memories. And I just love doing that kind of intervention with children. But we had closed circuit television. And so parents, even if they weren't still in the room,
yeah.
they
mm-hmm.
could really watch. And we tried to use kind of an observation window. But if the light is just right, you know, children realize and can see their parents on the other side, even if it's just a shadow, and they were way too distracted by that. But we found with in just an inexpensive closed circuit TV with a monitor, cameras inside the classroom and a monitor in the lobby, and we called it Playgroup
okay.
TV, that parents stood there and watched it, and sometimes parents stayed the whole 2.5 hours because they were so excited about what their children were getting to do. And then we had great
yeah.
carryover and follow-through because they could see it. And I like bringing parents into the classroom, too, so that they're involved. But sometimes their children then really thought it was time to go. When they saw mom appear, they thought, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah, sure.
So the monitoring system worked well for us. And I know all programs don't have those kinds of resources, and you can't always do that. But for me, that was optimal. For a parent to be able mm-hmm. to do that kind of thing, because then they could see exactly what we were doing.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. What other lessons? What will you do differently next time? Anything else?
Probably have a bit more functional activities, because we only had one, what we call the tour day, where we were able to take the children out and experience all the different teams. It was like a joining of all the different themes that we did during the week, because we went to the petting zoo to see the animals, we went on the bus,
mm-hmm.
so we had a social story about the bus.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the beach and picked up shells and splashed our feet in the water. But I wanted to have something that was a little bit more functional.
Right.
Maybe
every
day.
Right.
Yeah. So that they can go out
yeah,
and maybe in the evenings and do things. So
I think that's a great
carry
goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great goal. And I think sometimes you don't get any better information about a child regarding carryover other
yeah.
than seeing them in a new environment and seeing if they can retain their new little skills and if they can demonstrate those new little skills outside of the setting in which they first learned it. So I think
yeah.
field trips and community outings and those kinds of things are so important. Or it's important, you know, children that I've seen at home, we've set those situations up so that I've seen them in another setting. And for some children, even if you've seen them routinely in their own homes and then you see them at a grandparent's house, they're totally different children. Or
yeah,
things
sure.
that you thought that they really mastered, you realize, gosh, that just must have been kind of scripted for them, because I can change one variable here, which would be the location, and the child can no longer do what they were previously
mm-hmm.
doing. So I think you get better information about you know, that kind of progress, and the, like you were talking about, functional, you know, just how they're really performing. When you take the time and set up those other opportunities, children that I've seen at home and then I've seen them in my office, a clinical setting, sometimes things are completely different too. So you find out all kinds of things about children when you change their locations and change their settings a little bit. So I think that's That's huge. So I'm
That's
glad
true.
You mentioned that.
Yeah. Another thing I would like to do is to really have more therapy professionals involved, because I really like the idea of having a multidisciplinary team working together and catering to all the needs of the child. And I mean, we were really limited because this is a pilot project. We didn't have much funding at all, because we were able to get some funding from the Variety Club Barbados, and they were able to sponsor two of our children to come. Mm-hmm. But in terms of resources and funding, it was still quite limited, so we weren't able to get as many of the professionals as we would have wanted. And
right.
I would like to arrange it another time so we can get more funding, have, say, the occupational therapist in, have a play therapist in, because I've been speaking to a really good play therapist recently, and she has some amazing toys and some really good activities. And having maybe physio in to do different activities together so that we can have that
right.
that team approach
right.
to doing therapy.
And what you said at the beginning, then you're treating the whole child. And I think a lot of us as early interventionists, we do become pretty good at wearing a lot of different hats. We do. We are all at some point in time doing OT
yeah.
things and doing art
Ooh, yeah.
therapy and doing music therapy. But it is nice to have another professional that's all they do and their forte, and it's so nice to be able to get another perspective on that. Don't you learn so much as a therapist when you work with other great professionals? I love it for the kids, but I'm selfish and love it for me, because I always get such good ideas that I can keep then forever and use with children, and just different takes on things and different perspectives. And even something like learning new little songs and little routines that
yeah.
you can add to your own bag of tricks. So those are always really fun things for me to get to do too.
Mm-hmm.
Any parting words, Sharika, in your last 2 minutes? You learned a lot of lessons with that project.
I definitely did. I would tell any therapist that's looking to set up, it doesn't have to be a preschool classroom, but if you want to do groups, it would
right.
be really good to have a group, have some special ed support from a teacher, and run a group. Just, I would say, because I was really nervous about it. It was something that I tossed up quite a bit. But I would say just go for it. Get the advice. Get some good resources, go to Autism Helper, look up your pins on Pinterest, look up everybody's boards, and put together a program and see how it benefits the children. It's really good to have children within a group setting as opposed to the individual therapy, because you see how they function, they work together, you see the skills that they're strong in, and you see where they're lacking in,
right.
whether it be social skills, whether it be those communication skills, those turn-taking, those pre-verbal communication skills. That's where you see a lot of those things coming out when they're together in a group. You see a lot of the good things coming out together in a group, because there was one time where I had a little one who, he's having difficulty with feeding, and the other boy, he decided that he was going to feed him. And
wow.
Everybody just, yes. Everybody just froze in that moment where he decided
yeah.
he was going to feed him, and he opened his mouth and showed him how to say ah. And
aww.
He just saw those strengths coming out.
Yeah,
it's something that you wouldn't
that
see generally. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't have known that had you not had other children there. I think peer experiences are so important. Let me just say one quick word. A lot of times, though, parents of children who are not talking will put their child in just a regular daycare program or a Mother's Day out and think, okay, he's just not talking because he hasn't been around other children. That's rarely the case. And children really do benefit from that one-on-one with a caring adult, especially when you're learning how to talk, but you're really talking about social experiences. And again, those kinds of things that you may never have seen from a child had you not had a little peer there for him to interact with and
yeah.
from a social perspective. So That's great information, too. Great, great, great. Well, I am so happy to hear about your week, and thank you for coming on. And I want to say thanks to all our listeners who hung in here with all of these technical problems today. I hope that they stayed with us, and I'm going to post a little bit about that and say hang in there, because the show, you really will be able to hear some good snippets, even though we had kind of those dropped calls. But that's okay. That's just, again, real world technology and the things that happen. So thank you so much, Sharika, for sharing your experiences. I really appreciate it, and it's always fun when you're on the show.
I always love being on your show. So thank you again for having me.
Thank you. And you can check out Sharika's great work. This is the third time I've mentioned it now. It's teachmetotalk.com's Facebook page, and the post about today's podcast, and it's Easy Speak Autism Intervention Project.
Intervention
I knew
project.
I was missing a word. It was intervention. Yeah. And so check that out and see the great pictures that she posted, and come up with your own ideas for your own little group program for your little friends with autism spectrum disorders. Thank you so much, Sharika.
Right, thank you. You're welcome, too. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, next week's show, we're going to have another great blogger from Playing with Words. Katie's going to be on, so that's going to be a super, super show. And again, if you want to join me in Louisiana this week on Thursday and Friday, I would absolutely love to see you there. So check out that registration information at teachmetotalk.com. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.